Folks, sorry about that. You know, my first show ever and I'm experiencing technical difficulties. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? It's unbelievable. And you know what else was unbelievable? The missed penalty flag on the New Orleans Saints championship weekend in the NFL. The NFC came down to this. 1 minute, 45 seconds remaining. The Saints have the ball inside the red zone. Drew Brees throws a play to Tommy Lee Lewis in under route. The defender, the cornerback, elbows him in the head. The ball wasn't even being close to being caught. Let me be clear. There was over 0.5 seconds upon instant replay that the ball was before the ball came. He got elbowed in the head. His mouth guard came loose and there was no penalty call. It was just egregious. The audacity. I can't believe it. Frankly, it makes me sick. The Saints go on to lose after that. And let me be clear in this sense. It's true. Sometimes you just got to shake off plays. But with 1 minute 45 seconds left, the Saints could run out the clock and make it to the Super Bowl. As someone who's played a multitude of sports throughout my life, there's a lot of things I can shake off. But I can't shake off a chance to go to the Super Bowl being robbed by the referees. The NFL came out and apologized publicly. They said, I'm sorry, we didn't mean this. But in my opinion, it just seems like the people who screwed up placing the attention on themselves, right? If you screw up, shut up and go fix this. My proposal would be for allowing the coaches to challenge on any play in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. And you hear the pundits on TV saying, oh, well, it would disrupt the flow of the game. And it wouldn't make for an entertaining football match. Guess what? The last 2 minutes are extremely slow anyway. What's an extra minute or two so that the correct team goes to the Super Bowl? It just makes no sense. When you look at this ruling structure, it seems like people who haven't played sports created it. It makes me sick, and it makes me sick to my stomach. And that wasn't the only controversy. We looked at the overtime rule kind of stealing the show in the AFC Championship. Patriots win 37-31. Tom Brady at it again, throwing for 348 and a TD, while Sony Michel going for 113 on the ground. And look, Tom Brady is a bad man. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. There's no debate. None whatsoever. That's why I bet on the Patriots to win. There's only two people in sports, teams I should say, but two people in sports that I always bet for and I never bet against. Floyd Money Mayweather Jr., and Thomas Edward Brady. Those are the only two. I never bet against them. And give Mahomes credit, because once Brady put the go-ahead score on the board with 39 seconds left, Mahomes still had time to get a field goal. So I cashed out my bet and played the other side as well and made a couple bucks there as well. But back to this overtime rule. So again, this is where the NFL is going out of their way to screw up a good thing. The rules state that on the first possession of overtime, if you score a touchdown, it's over. Why wouldn't the other team at least get a chance to get a touchdown? It makes no sense. Sure, I understand the logic where, well, if one team gets the touchdown, the next team gets the ball, then it just turns into a four-down conversion. It makes it easy. No. It's also one 15-minute period. Can't run down the clock like that, and it's just plain unfair. Like, these rules are made, it seems like, by people who haven't played sports, and it's a shame because we had two tremendous overtime games in the NFL with four tremendous teams, and they're both overshadowed by these egregious missed calls by the referees and pathetic overtime rules. Patriots will play the LA Rams in the final. For the Super Bowl, we'll have a detailed analysis next week. Stick around, folks, right after this quick commercial break. I'm going to break down the return of Tiger Woods. The Big Cat makes his debut in less than 48 hours out west. And so much more, along with the Leaf panel at 7:35. And And we are back on the Radio Laurier Network, folks. It is 7:23 Eastern Time, 4:23 Pacific, or it could be a whole other 23, no matter where you are in the world. Let's talk about Tiger Woods. He returns this week at the Farmers Insurance Open, teeing off in less than 48 hours. And, you know, this is really going to be an interesting test. So Tiger kind of took the golf world by storm last year when he returned. And not only returned, but played very well. He was a top 15 player in the world. I believe his highest rank was 12th. However, he started the season late. So his true world ranking, based on the tournaments he had played in, because the world ranking takes up over a year's worth of tournaments, Tiger's pro-rated world ranking was a top 10. I mean, he was spectacular. And where does he lie at this coming week? We'll also break down his expected performance throughout the year. And I have a couple predictions about that some of the Tiger fans may not actually like. But upcoming is the Farmer Insurance Open. Pretty good field. Guys like Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, Justin Rose, and defending champ Jason Day will be back. I got to be honest. I got the big cat finishing 24th. And why would I do that, right? Well, the main reason is that coming off of layoffs, the big cat does not play very well. And this is evidenced last year. Let's go through the facts. So, the Genesis Open, after 3 weeks of break, he's cut. The Masters, after 3 weeks of break, comes 32nd. The Wells Fargo Championship, after 4 weeks of break, finishes 55th. And the Memorial, after 3 weeks of break, he finishes 23rd. Compare it to some tournaments where he had played just the week before. So this is what we would call a back-to-back. Valspar Championship, back-to-back Arnold Palmer. Tied for second and then tied for fifth. The Players Championship, which was a week after the Wells Fargo tournament, which I had mentioned he came 55th in. Tied for 11th. The week after the World Golf Championship was the PGA Championship, the year's final major. Big Cat finishes second, and boy was he close to winning. But the Hulk, Brooks Koepka, just kept driving it 350 yards down the middle and just wedging it to birdie range. It was unbelievable, but the Big Cat came second there. And not to mention the playoffs, he played very well. Came tied for sixth at the BMW Championship, and of course the week after, wins the Tour Championship. So all those stats and that research that I provided to you have basically brought me the opinion that after a very long layoff, I don't expect big things from Tiger. He is very talented, but I imagine he's using these first few tournaments to make some adjustments, get his groove back as we enter really the meat of the schedule. And this year, because the PGA Tour has made some changes, the meat of the schedule starts earlier. It starts in March. Right, it starts with the Players' Championship in March down in Florida. Usually the Masters is that first big wow tournament that really wakes people up. Some could say the World Golf Championship, but I don't think the eyes are there as they are at, say, the Bridgestone Invitational World Golf Championship, which is in August. So I got the big cat coming in 24th. We'll see how he does. I mean, he was a bit of a mixed bag earlier last year. He continued to be in. You know, he also mentioned that his schedule is going to be heavily reduced this year compared to the previous one. That, I don't think, also bodes as well. I think, you know, he knows his body better than anyone. He will definitely need some breaks. But if he breaks too much, he just loses a bit of a rhythm. So I'm actually predicting this year, Tiger wins two times, one of those being the U.S. Open, Pebble Beach. He's played very well at Pebble Beach before, and I think he'll use that knowledge to succeed and win another U.S. Open. And I think he'll win another tournament, probably one of the ones the TGR Foundation is a part of. Could be the Genesis. We know he knows Riviera very well. He was cut last year, but, I mean, he was just coming back, so expect to bounce back. I could see him winning maybe at Riviera or maybe at the Memorial. And we know he used to have a part in that. Over in Washington. So we'll see about that. There's a few new tournaments added to the schedule. They're playing in Detroit this year. And, we'll be interested to see the big cat play. But I think he wins the U.S. Open. That's my prediction. and he wins another tournament that he has a hand in, I'd go with Riviera, so the Genesis Open, which is in February. I think he'll win in February. But as for this week, my pick to win is going to surprise folks. Rory McIlroy. Let me be frank. I'm not a big Rory McIlroy fan at all. This is a two-pronged approach to why I'm taking Rory. First off, he's hot. He just finished tied for fourth at the Century Tournament of Champions. That's what he needs to do. He needs to put in good finishes, right? Rory is one of those guys that feeds off momentum like no one's seen before. When he's got that eye, and when he's driving the ball, he zones in like no one else on tour. So for him to go out and place strong finish in the Century Tournament of Champions, where only the big names are at, the champs of the previous year, is very important. That was a couple weeks ago. And the other reason is just he's more committed. He's committed to the PGA Tour. He said this year he's going to reduce his starts on the Euro Tour, and that's what he needs, right? When the biggest events of the year are on U.S. soil, right, three out of four of them anyway, you got to be more comfortable. You can't play on different styles of courses like Lynx Golf over in Europe and expect to come out and dominate when you're in the U.S. It's not a sustainable strategy. I like that he's moving back to the U.S. I think that'll bode well for him, and I think he knocks in an early W at the Farmers Insurance Open. We'll just have to see. But that's my predictions for this week. I got the Big Cat, a top 25 finish, nothing special. I got Rory to win, and I got Tiger winning two times this year. The U.S. Open, I predict one major, and another tournament. I'm guessing Riviera, the Genesis Open. We know he'll play that. He's already committed, but you never know. I got two W's for the Big Cat this year. Folks, stick around. After this short break, I'm going to have the Leafland panel. What's going on in Leafsland? Talking Jake Gardner, the fans' displeasure via booing, and William Nylander. All that and more. Stick around. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network. And we are back on the Radio Laurier Network, folks. Thanks for tuning in. I have the Leafs panel with me here. What's going on in Leafland? I have Cameron Reeves based out of St. Catharines and Evan Preto from Toronto. Guys, how you doing?
Not too bad, thank you.
All right.
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, Nicola. Thanks for having me on.
Great, guys. Before we get into the meat and potatoes here, I really want to ask about the whole booing situation and Jake Gardner. So we know last week, and it's really it's been pushed on into this week. Jake Gardner, subject of boos after being cleanly beat on a one-on-one. Look, Cameron, I'll ask you first. Do you think he deserves it? Is this just a source of frustration that's been pent up potentially? And do you think it works? I mean, he bounced back in the Tampa game and in the other couple of games, but what are your thoughts on this situation?
First of all, I just want to address the topic of booing your own players in general. I never recommend it, man. In my opinion, I think it's completely ridiculous to boo your own players, especially when they're working hard. As you can see on that play, no one ever talks about how Marner actually coughed up the puck to the blue line to begin with. And then Gardner, already not being known for being a defensive defenseman, is in a tough battle with another offensive player, and he simply just loses a one-on-one battle while he's already on a power play. And you know what? That kind of stuff happens as a defenseman. You just have to take that. And in my opinion, for the second topic, is did the booing help his game? Of course not. That's absolutely ridiculous. When would booing your own player motivate him to not work as hard? The fact of the matter is that Jake Gardner is one of the hardest working players on this Toronto Maple Leafs team. And just because of the fact that he's an offensive defenseman, and he takes chances, he has a bad rep. And so to go back to the second point, no, of course not. It did not help him at all. If anything, it was bad for our team. It gave the city a bad look. And in my opinion, I just think he just blocked out the noise completely and just kept playing his game. I think that's why he was successful in the games following.
Okay, Evan, I want to pass this over to you. We know you are a big Gardner fan. What are your thoughts on the situation?
It's
to me, it comes back to, you know, I've watched this team, I'd say, since about 2004, just right after the NHL lockout in 04. And it seems that the fan base, they always have to have somebody to pick on. Coming out of the lockout, it was a few years of not making the playoffs, everybody picked on Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf. I know many years before I even watched, there were stories we've all heard of Larry Murphy. The time that guy touched the puck, they blew him. They ran him out of town, and then he'd go on and win the cup in Detroit. The fan base mystifies me sometimes. I feel it's the same guys that vote and who are star players, like the Kessels and the Gardners, the Phaneufs, the Larry Murphys, but then they go and idolize the Ty Domes.
Well, okay.
I don't think this fan base really appreciates what talented player is.
Okay, before we get too into it, booing star players, I mean, I could name a half dozen guys on off the top of my head that are better than Gardner on this team, like that are more valuable than Gardner to this team. Like, come
on this team?
Oh, absolutely. Let's go through it. Tavares, Marner, Matthews, I'd go Riley, Anderson, and I'd maybe even put Marlowe as a good veteran leadership and presence.
Marlowe.
Absolutely.
Come on.
Absolutely.
That's outlandish.
No, you know
Patrick
what?
Patrick Marlowe, this is 2019, my friend.
You know what's really outlandish? Let me tell you something what's really outlandish, okay? He is a high talented, low IQ player.
Patrick Marlowe has less than half a point per game this season. Gardner, playing as a defenseman, has more than half a point per game this season.
Not true. Gardner has 20. Okay, yeah, half a point a game. Fair. I'll give you that.
And Marlowe's below that.
Marlowe's one of those guys. Look, you're not. He's going to bring intangibles.
Oh, come on, man. You know what? Lou Lamoriello made one bad thing here. He gave Marlowe one too many years.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. He's here 1 year too long. But let's talk about Gardner here back. So maybe not a half dozen players more valuable, but at least five off the top of my head. Okay, one of my favorite advanced stats.
I agree with you, but where does he rank you among our most valuable defensemen?
That's a tough question because, unfortunately, at this moment in time, yes, number two on probably the weakest defensive core in the Eastern Conference playoff teams. No,
if
but
you're going to run him out of town. What's the defense going to look like next season?
No,
it's going to be Morgan Riley.
Well, let's get into that because I'm curious you say that, right? Because Gardner has a history of not showing up in the playoffs, but Gardner's going to cost
a
lot.
Come on, that's
because if we look at Gardner's contract, right, $4.05 million, if I was in the negotiating table, I would offer him a 10% raise and no more. I would say you're taking $4.5 million on a 4-year deal, or you're hitting the road because we already have signed Calle Rosen for a 2-year deal for $1.5 million total, who will produce probably 3/4 to 4/5 of the output you do, right?
Three
and we can use we can
generous.
No, we can use that extra cap space to shore up the D. I don't see the problem with this. Gardner, let's look at his Fenwick stats, okay? He has declined 4 straight years. He's now under 50%. Fenwick, for those who don't know, is the amount of chances that you have offensively over the total amount of chances you have in the game. And these are scoring chances. These aren't shots. They're scoring chances. Okay, and it's 49.4% this year for Gardner, which has dropped 4 straight years. And the zone starts, they haven't dropped much either. It's gone from 52% in the offensive zone to 54, to 50, to 51. That has remained stable. Gardner's performance has not.
Okay. I love that you brought up the Corsi and Fenwick stat there. Jake Gardner actually starts, I'll tell you this, at even strength, he starts 49.5% of his starts are in the defensive zone. Morgan Riley, 46.2. And they have the same Fenwick. So if you want to talk about Fenwick, I mean, come on. And one of them's playing with ANZ and one of them's playing with Zaitsev. They're both playing with anchor.
I agree. Riley is also playing with a bit of an anchor, and I'm not too high on Zaitsev as well. But Gardner's been here so long, we know exactly what we're getting. That's my point. There hasn't been much change, and if anything, there's been a slight decrease in change over the past several years with Gardner. He's just a high-talented, low-IQ player. There's no way around it. He makes mistakes
like he is a rookie. Where does the low IQ come in?
He makes mistakes like he's a rookie, and he continues to be.
But he does not take them in. Is that the type of player he is?
Only 51 hits last year. That is weak.
That's going to happen, though, with those types of offensive.
Exactly.
Listen, there's players like this. Another great example is PK Subban. Not well liked by fans, but has offensive production.
That's not true.
If you're going to have offensive production, there's going to be a downside of taking risks, and that's what Gardner does. That's his game. So I don't really understand what you want him to do. And also, the second thing is Dermott, Riley, Hainsey. I could go on, man. How many guys this year on the Leafs defensive core have been coughing up the puck, making dumb decisions? It's not just him, and for some reason he's getting singled out. And to be honest, that play against Colorado, man, that wasn't a dumb decision at all. How was that a rookie mistake? That's him fighting for a puck and him being an offensive defenseman, already not in a great position. He just lost the puck. That's not a dumb decision. So how is that a low IQ move?
No, if you want to watch, so we're talking about the same play here, right? He glided back. You're right. Marner did cough up the puck, but Gardner glided back. The forward just blatantly outskated him. Once Gardner felt him, he tried to put a shoulder into him and was way too weak and got beat cleanly. And let me take your other point about...
He glided back.
You said...
Were you watching the same play?
Absolutely. Avalanche came in there and blew the tires off the Leafs.
No.
In their own barn.
No.
It was a disgrace.
From my understanding, is he went hard for that puck and he just lost the battle. It's nothing to do with IQ. Nothing. Zero.
Okay, let me address, though, your other point. You said he gets the flack and some of the other defense don't.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Ron Hainsey, I don't think anyone thinks of him as a good defenseman. Like, he is just filling cap space at this point, playing out his career on a contender.
Okay. Him and Zaitsev.
Okay, all right. But, like,
Dermott is in
just,
his...
So just because... No, hold on. Just because... So now Hainsey just has a pass because no one thinks he's a good defenseman, so now he's not held accountable in any sense? Come on.
No, he is held accountable. I don't think we disagree that he's held accountable. But the standard you set with Jake Gardner, if you're saying he's such a great player, why are they both making the same mistakes? No one's saying that Hainsey's a great player. The standards are different.
No, but here's the thing, though. We're not saying he's a great defensive defenseman. That's why we're saying he's a great offensive defenseman. And when you're an offensive defenseman, You're obviously gonna lack strength most of the time, and you're gonna cough up the puck, and that's what he does. So
you're right,
that's
he does.
The situation he's in.
Third
and
giveaways last
game,
year.
That very same game, Dermott coughed up the puck from behind our net with all like dumb no look pass, and I didn't hear. And if we're talking IQ, man, that's way lower bad decision than what happened to Gardner. So it makes no sense to me.
I'm with you. Dermott did make a bad play there, and I agree. But he is in his third year, and Gardner is 28. There's a difference with these types of just awful, egregious mistakes.
I'm gonna step in there. You know, people when I ask fans why they hate Jake Gardner, and what do you get? Oh, he gives away the puck. He's a giveaway machine. People love to label him a giveaway machine, but guess what? You can't turn over the puck without having lots of touches. Lots of touches means you have possession, and players without a lot of turnovers are generally getting caved in their own D zone. I mean, like, I'm looking at a list here. Here are the league leaders in turnovers the last 5 years. Brent Byrne, Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty, Keith Yandle, PK Subban, John Klingberg, and Jake Gardner. I mean, that's pretty elite company.
Well, I'll give you that. The one category he is with elite players is in the giveaway category. How funny. Let's switch gears and talk Nylander.
Okay. Well, guess what? Okay, you like giveaways. He's first amongst our defensemen in even strength ice time, or he's tied there with Riley. And Riley has 54 giveaways. He's got the most giveaways, but Gardner ranks fourth at 43.
Well, let's look at
11 less.
Well, let's look at Riley's output offensively compared to Gardner's, because someone has a lot more points, and it isn't Jake. Let's switch gears and talk Nylander here. Okay, here's something we can all agree on.
For somebody that puts up so much against Riley, like, he doesn't have his plus minus isn't that great. He's out there for a lot of goals against.
Fair, I'll give you that. Riley's plus minus could use a little work. Let's talk Nylander here. We can all agree that Nylander's just been preposterous. He's been awful. 4 points in 20 games. Cam, I'll start with you. What the heck's wrong with him?
Oh, man.
Where to begin?
This to me is pretty. This to me is pretty inexplainable, if you ask me. It's getting to the point now where it's just. It's almost sad. Just in his case, it's sad for the. Just sad for him as a player in this situation. Just to come off that whole delay of him not playing with the Leafs and then finally signing that deal and then just having it start like this is really unfortunate. Honestly, I couldn't really tell you, but just from my analysis of the games, he's like, it seems like he's trying to get something going, but he's missing that extra step. And like, if I were him, I'd be going to the net a little bit more. Like he's averaging 14 minutes still. Minute 43 on the power play, and only still has a goal and 3 assists. It's pretty pathetic, and I don't know. It's unexplainable. I guess you could just point it to him starting so late, and he's just in a funk.
Maybe. You want to touch on this, Evan?
Yeah, just the play of Nylander, it's been somewhat mystifying this season. You know, I kind of gave him a grace period the first 10 games. It's like, it's his preseason. He's just getting accumulated. Adjusting to the whole, you know, the switchover, you know. But I don't know, like, it's the one I will say this, I do believe he will at some point get back to his form. I believe his contract, which is after this season, he's got, what, 5 years at $6.9 million cap hit. That will turn out to be a value cap hit in 2 to 3 years. This is a guy that's going to score you 70 points. You just got to find a way to chug along. I can't for the life of me understand when the media outlets in Toronto want to run this guy out of town when his value's at an all-time low. I mean, his first two NHL seasons, he had his first two full NHL seasons, 61 points in each of them, and that's as a 20 and 21-year-old. I mean, the guy is going to be a 70 to 80-point player in the future. He's got a hell of a shot. He can score 30, no problem, but I don't know. I think Babcock's got to be held accountable. Nylander, you know, I look at his body language out there. I hate to say this, but sometimes it looks like he doesn't really care. Like, I know he cares, but, like, it just looks like he should be a little more pissed off. I don't know. That's just me, but
I'm with you.
Babs could help him out with it.
Yeah, I'm with you on the running him out of town. Look, it's probably a bit ridiculous to look for a trade when his value is at an all-time low. It really is. I think the problem is ego. I think it's just a lot of ego. He held out. This was a high-profile contract dispute. He held out, and he won. He got his money, and he felt entitled, and he won the standoff with manager Dubas, and he won the battle. But he's not going to win the war. You know, I've come back from injury, specifically in hockey, and you're right, a grace period is fair, 5 to 10 games to really get your feet under you. But if you have 4 points in 20 games, it's a mess. I like the recent move by Babcock to move him to the fourth line. Unlike Mitch Marner last year, we remember Marner was demoted to the fourth line. I didn't like that move, and I didn't like that move. Let me tell you why. Even in the slump, Marner played with heart. Nylander, clearly with this contract dispute, has a bit of an ego problem. I think the fourth line can humble him. I really think it'll humble him. And you know, 10 to 12 minutes of ice time a night, that'll humble you, especially after all the hoopla you created by, let's face it, being a little selfish and putting yourself before the team. So we'll see what happens. But I have to think Nylander's got to wake up, and he's got to wake up soon on this fourth line. Or he may not be part of the Leafs' future plans, whether we all like it or not, because 4 points in 20 games, making almost $7 million a year, is just unacceptable and sad. All right, guys, let's get our final thoughts here as the show and the segment's wrapping up here. What's happening in Leafland? The Toronto Maple Leafs are going to host the Stanley Cup champs tomorrow. What are your thoughts on the Capitals here, and who do you think is going to come out with the victory?
Ooh, just to start things off, I think it's going to be a good game. The Capitals have always solid against us, in my opinion. Going back to our playoff series, and the Leafs have been up and down recently, and Capitals. I think it'll be a good game.
Evan, you got any predictions here tomorrow?
Sorry, what's that?
You got any predictions for tomorrow's game here?
It's going to come down. I mean, on Sunday we saw a preview of what next season is going to look like without Jake Gardner on defense if he was out with back tightness. If Marty Perrinchin is in tomorrow, good luck. I mean, I don't know. You know what? But I will say this: the Leafs, they played well against Tampa Bay last week. They played up to their opponent. See if they can do that with Washington. It seems they've been taking a rest against the Floridas and the Arizona Coyotes. But it'll come down to effort and ultimately execution. Got to be able to finish.
And if I could just chime in too, the Caps have lost their last four games, and not including San Jose tonight. But I think this is a good time to. For the Leafs to just jump on them if they can, but if not, I think the Caps are also going to be, if they lose the game tonight, going to be coming out swinging and try to get that first win after a long losing streak.
Yeah,
so I predict two for Nylander tomorrow.
I'm with both of you guys. The Caps have been reeling a bit too. These are two high-powered offenses that are struggling. If Gardner's not good to go, then. Good luck having Ovechkin tear up Martin Marincin. That'll be a problem. I think the Leafs will pull it out at home, though, so that'll be interesting to watch. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it. We'll have you back in due course. Folks, that is all tonight on the Radio Laurier Network. This is The Crunch. I'm going to sign off for now. I'll be back Tuesdays at 7 every week until the spring, until it gets warm. So, folks, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. This is The Crunch on the Radio Laurier Network.